Every Woman is a womanish show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project, Incorporated.
Good afternoon. That was Amy Bell you just heard, co-host of Every Woman. And Molly Postlewaite was unable to get in today. She was going to do a segment with our last guest, and I will introduce her first, even though she's going to be last. Her name is Sherry Roulette Mosley, and she's going to be talking. She's an actress in Kansas City, and she's going to be talking about her role as an actress and how that came to be and her role models who she has held up, and a play she's going to be in shortly at the Just Off Broadway Theater. So we'll hear from her last, so stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, we're going to talk about the Missouri ERA, and we have Jane Krigler in the studio with us from AAUW, and she's the Missouri political chair for AAUW. And Mary Mosley's on the line with us, and we'll bring her up on the air to talk about the ERA three-state strategy, which she's been working on for years and years and years, ever since I've known her practically. And then Courtney Cole will join us shortly from the Women's Political Caucus to talk about young women and the importance of the ERA and why women deserve it. So let's get started with Mary Mosley. Mary, are you there? Hello, Mary? Are you online with us? Mary? Interesting. Everything's turned on and potted up, and I guess we need to put in a phone call to her. So let's move on to Jane to talk about the campaign strategy while we get Mary back on the line. Jane?
Thank you. Yes, I'm Jane Krigler, and I'm with the State American Association of University Women, who got this notion that this was the year, why not, to set our sights on equal rights and get as many co-signers to the ERA resolutions that are to be introduced in the Missouri State House to pass the ERA and become one of the last three states needed to ratify this and get it in our Constitution. We've been joined by some really important supporting organizations who are tapping their membership and their finances to help support this activity this year. In addition to AAUW, we've got the Missouri State Women's Political Caucus, Missouri Now, Missouri Women's Network, the Greater Kansas City of Coalition of Labor Women, Vision 2020 Missouri, and other organizations that are interested in endorsing this and getting involved but need to take approval through their board. So what we're trying to do is to get constituents of every district, every representative's district, every senator, district to go down there, call or email. We're trying to do this on a specific day because we've learned that it only takes 20 people calling in or alerting their legislator to the importance of this. And that's what we're after. And we hope that everyone listening can contact their legislators to ask for support of the ERA this year and urge their friends and neighbors to do the same. In addition to what we're doing generally in this way, we're fortunate in AAUW to have college and university partners. So we're going to have a little speakers bureau go around and try to activate the students in our partner universities and colleges around the state and try to get the students active because they can reach some legislators that we in the city cannot. So I'll stop there.
And it's interesting. Mary, are you online with us now?
Well, I can hear you. I don't know if you can hear me.
We can hear you. We can hear you. I wanted to say to Jane that a study was done for the group you belong to, or we both belong to, years ago, that 80% of the public believe that the Equal Rights Amendment has passed.
Yeah, 78% think that it's already part of the Constitution.
And why is the Equal Rights Amendment important, and what is the three-state strategy?
Okay, well, I think I should talk about the three-state strategy first, because a lot of people, either they think that it's already part of the Constitution, or they think that it's a dead issue, because wasn't that in the 1970s we were working for that? And it was. It came out of Congress in the 1970s, and it has to be ratified by three-quarters of the states, and that's 38 states. So they gave it a time limit of 7 years for ratification, which is fairly unusual. There are a few amendments that have had a time limit, but not very many. And so when the 7 years was almost up, it still hadn't got the 38 states that it needed to be part of the Constitution. So we went back to Congress and we said, well, can you extend that timeline? And they extended it by 3 years. So when that deadline ran out in 1982, we still had only got 35 states to ratify it. So we needed three more. So we thought, well, we'll have to start all over. So we kept introducing it into Congress every year. And it never got any action. But what happened in 1992 was that the Madison Amendment became part of the Constitution after 203 years. So some women who were then law students looked at this amendment that got 200 years for ratification, and they said, how come the Equal Rights Amendment only got 10? They started researching time limits, and they decided that what we should do is try to get the final three states to ratify the amendment. And it has to be ratified by the legislatures of the states, and try to get those last three states to ratify, and then get Congress to set aside the time limit. And so we're working on two fronts now, where there are bills in Congress to get the time limit set aside, in both in the House and the Senate. And excuse me. And we're working in the states to get this. There are 15 states that never ratified the Equal Rights Amendment, and we're working in several of those states now to get it ratified.
So are you saying that this is the only amendment that was given a timeline?
No, it's not the only one. It's one of the few, though. The ones that were proposed in the 20th century, in the later 20th century, several of them have a time limit.
And so the time has run out on those and nobody's pursuing it?
So the time has run out on what? The Equal Rights Amendment?
No, on the other amendments.
Oh, well, there was a... Yeah, one of them the time limit ran out on, but mm-hmm. Some of them are part of the Constitution now.
Uh-huh. Okay, so they've been turned into the Constitution instead of ratification, and we're getting off topic here a little bit. But it's kind of confusing about why they can arbitrarily decide there's a time limit on some and not others.
Well, Congress has that power, so.
What was the opposition to this? Why did anybody think that having equal rights was not worth voting on?
Well, that's a really good question. It was really, really controversial when it was brought up in the 70s because women had been in what we now call traditional roles for quite some time. And, you know, you didn't turn on the news and see a woman anchor. There were no women CEOs of companies, big companies. Women were just not allowed into many of the professions. And so it was quite controversial at the time, and there were all kinds of silly arguments about it. But they boiled down to three or four, and they're still using those same arguments today. One of the big ones was that women would be drafted. Women would have to serve in the military right alongside men. Well, guess what? Women are serving in the military now right alongside men, and they're even going to be allowed into combat this year, so that argument sort of shot.
They fought tooth and nail to be able to fight next to men.
That's right. But this was a very powerful argument because in the 70s we were in the Vietnam War, and it was an unpopular war, and people didn't want their sons to go to that war, you know, let alone their daughters. And so this was a powerful argument in the 1970s. Then the other arguments were that it would allow gay marriage. Well, guess what? 16 states now have gay marriage. And counting, you know. They're not enforcing the federal law against gay marriage. So it's an idea whose time has come. And we still don't have the Equal Rights Amendment.
And how are we doing on Missouri? What's the progress there? Who's going to report on what's taking place in Missouri?
Well, let me talk about one other argument, and
okay.
This is the worst one. This is the biggest problem, and that is abortion. They've linked it to abortion because if it has to do with women, surely it must have something to do with abortion. And so once they link it, we can't unlink it. And, you know, you can read the amendment. It's a simple statement. Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. It doesn't say anything about abortion.
Right.
And we contend it has nothing to do with it, but once the anti-ERA people have linked it, it's pretty hard for us to unlink it and convince them that it doesn't have anything to do with it. And so that's the biggest problem right now.
And with regard for the need for it, the United States stands pretty much alone in all the Western countries in lacking protection for women. And without that, we can be discriminated against in many, many ways, insurance, employment, you know, wages. And so I think your listeners probably know a lot about the need for it, but I just wanted to mention that. And I also wanted to put in a plug to go to the Women's Political Caucus website and click on ERA Campaign. It's the www.mowpc.org for some excellent videos that play this forward in terms of what the problems are and the need for young women to get behind this.
And yes, that's a really good point, Jane.
And Mary, you also said that women, since women have entered the job force, we're now 25% of the GDP?
That's correct. Yeah, I think that one of the most powerful arguments, one of the most important reasons why we need the Equal Rights Amendment is that women are so important to the economy of the United States now. Since women have entered the workforce from 1970 until now, we've constituted a quarter of the gross domestic product, and that's very significant. And the reason that the gross domestic product is so high is because of women being in the workforce. And in order for the United States to maintain its position in the world economy, we need women. And we need to recognize the importance of women, and one way to do that is to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. And if, by the way, if women were paid as much as men, which we hope would follow if the Equal Rights Amendment were finally ratified and became part of the U.S. Constitution, then the GDP would go up even higher. So I think this is just a really important reason why we need the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary. And this seems like a kind of a good segue into the important reason why we need KKFI, so that we could have you on today to talk about this action that's taking place in Missouri and to inform our listeners about the action and what they can do to be part of this and to help move this along, because there have been women working for ages for women's rights, and KKFI has done its part to put women on the air, and certainly Every Woman and the program prior to us, Women's International News Gathering Service. And so we're going to take this time to ask our listeners to call in with a donation to KKFI to help support your community radio station. Amy, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, in addition to supporting a women's-oriented feminist public affairs program, we also have some special gifts that you can receive if you make a donation, and we'll give you some information about that right now. It's coming.
Oh, good.
While we're waiting for that, maybe I could just say that today Missouri women make on average just 78 cents for each dollar paid to men, and 62% of Missouri women work full or part-time. 285,000 of Missouri women are the primary breadwinner for their families, and the wage discrepancies last with women into their retirement.
Is it still coming?
Yeah, it's right here.
Okay, good.
If you contribute at a $90 level or more, we can thank you with the new KKFI long sleeve violet colored shirt. A contribution of $150 or more is eligible for a 1-hour guest DJ certificate for use on one of our music programs. And a $200 contribution warrants both of these items. These thank yous are for credit card contributions only. Just let them know your choice and shirt size when you call 888-931-0901.
And that telephone number to call is 888-931-0901. And call right now and make your pledge. I know I'll be making a pledge this week and next week, too, no doubt. And I'll probably hear somebody on the radio this week that I'll feel so compelled I'll have to call in and make another pledge to their show, too, because I really do believe in what KKFI has to offer. And we hope that our listeners believe in it, too. And we know that you do, because so many of you do call in with your pledges during the year. And it's so important that we hear from you now. If you're a first time, if you've never considered contributing before, and you listen to KKFI and you've ever heard anything that was important to you, please call in now and let us know you appreciate KKFI. That's 888-931-0901. 888-931-0901. Or you can go online at kkfi.org and pledge and make a donor contribution. It's safe, it's easy, and it's quick. And Amy, you wanted to say something? And now we're going to move along and call our next guest, Courtney Cole. And while we're doing that, call 888-931-0901 with your pledge.
Well, Sharon, let me say, this is not a matching contribution. However, if people will on their own be willing to call their legislators, I'll commit to making a sizable donation to KKFI.
Well, I will certainly, whoops, I live in Kansas, dang it, but I'll get my daughter who lives in Missouri, she will definitely call in.
Excellent.
I will make sure a lot of my Missouri friends call in for a contribution to KKFI. Thank you so much, Jane. We can thank Jane over the air. Pre-thank her for her contribution.
We do have Courtney on the air on the line right now. Courtney, can you hear us?
I can hear you all. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Have you been listening online, Courtney?
I have, yes.
Good. And you're with the Greater Kansas City Women's Political Caucus and
yes.
are taking part in this campaign. And tell us what your perspective is on this.
Well, you know, I like to consider myself young. I feel I'm still a young woman. And I'm a mother. I have a daughter who is six. And, you know, a lot of my networks are made up of young women, fellow moms and other young women who are working on these issues. And personally, you know, I see that the Equal Rights Amendment not being ratified, and not being in our Constitution, really is having a great impact on younger women and families economically. So the things that both Jane and Mary were discussing earlier fall right in line with what I'm seeing with younger women as well. And I feel that as the gap grows wider between the haves and the have-nots, our younger families, especially women, are going to begin to feel the impact, and they already are. You know, the president had stated in his State of the Union address the other night that women make 77 cents to the dollar that every man makes. But there was a study that was done here in Missouri in 2011, and the conclusion was found that on average, Missouri women only make 74 cents to the dollar that every man makes. And those who are minorities would probably show that the earnings are even less, not to mention then the gap between a livable wage and a minimum wage. Which is another issue. And the livable wage here in Missouri would be $8.17 for just one adult. And if you raise that to one adult and one child, which would be in a majority of cases single mothers with just one child, the livable wage then would be $16.84 an hour. So nearly one-fourth of all of our United States children live in single-parent families, and the number rises each day. So this shouldn't really even be considered a feminist issue, but rather it's a human rights issue. And if women had equal rights in our U.S. Constitution, being equal according to the law would discourage pay disparity. And our economy, as you all know, is driven by consumers. And women have a major buying power. They're major players in consumer markets, and they're responsible for 83% of all consumer purchases. Yet women are not given bank loans as often as men. They have to pay higher rates for insurance. They're discriminated against in the workforce, and they're not, you know, we're not paid equally. So until I think we as women have equal rights in our country, we're going to have to continue to fight all of these other battles that come before us legislatively that we're seeing. As Mary had described, you know, earlier, that they're linking abortion to this. Well, it's separate. It's completely separate. You know, we are women, but we're human, and that should not be denied.
And I want to make it clear, too, that when they talk about women making 74 or 77 cents to a man's dollar, that's if she's got as much education or more education and doing the same job title. That doesn't even take into account the wages, the traditional jobs that are considered beneath men that women do. And well, for example, and there are more men teachers now, but the teaching profession, men and women make different wages. And it just goes on and on. It's atrocious. But the fact that women as housekeepers and the women, the work that women do that is unpaid, that isn't even counted. I believe that around the world, women do 80% of the unpaid work, and that never gets factored into anything. And it's just a travesty. And I just bring that out because I'm so livid about it.
Well, a lot of people do make arguments about women make less money statistically because they just don't apply themselves and they just don't want to be CEOs,
right,
because they
right.
want to stay home with their family. And that's not even, those numbers aren't even comparing.
Well, yes, and AAUW, our national organization, has studied this, and when you take all the factors out, they've published a good, really interesting publication called Graduating to a Pay Gap. And really, when education's the same, background the same, men continue to prevail in the wage arena.
I have a story that is shocking to me. I'm going to a eye specialist and was talking with the woman that's been working with me, and she says, the next time you come in, I may not be here. She says, I've gone to Florida and applied for a job in Naples, and I said, really? Yeah. She says, it pays more. she was making as a college graduate $15 an hour, and I was just kind of shocked because I would have assumed by her responsibility that she would have been paid more than that, but she's relocated, she and her husband, to Florida for $19 an hour, which is a heck of an increase, actually, when you consider it, $4 an hour. Wow, what is that, really? A 25% increase, isn't it? Something like that. So it's going to make a big difference for her, and she's going to live in a warm climate, too.
I had a question for Courtney. Are you finding it harder sometimes to get the younger women to realize the importance of the ERA because they didn't live through the fight the first time around? They didn't see the struggle. They didn't see the failure. They didn't see it getting painted in this negative light right from the beginning. Is it harder to get the passion behind the ERA in the younger women?
I understand what you're saying, but, you know, I think, too, in the networks that I'm in and who I'm surrounded by, of course, I'm just naturally surrounded by a lot of younger women who can see it for what it is and are feeling, you know, the impact of it daily and are very passionate about it. And I feel, too, that as we continue with the caucus and the other women's organizations and making it a point and continuing to talk about it, continuing to march, you know, in our state capitol each year in support of women's rights and to speak at hearings, that they're waking up, you know, they're seeing it. And as soon as they see it, then they're on board, because it's just common sense, I think, when it comes down to it, that women deserve the same equal rights as men. And I think that it comes down to what it really comes down to is education. It's educating them. And as soon as then you can show, hey, you know, you don't have equal rights, and here's how this is impacting you, then they're right there and they're right on board. So it's mainly outreach that we need. And then, of course, we need action to come from that, which I have found to be very easy once, you know, once you let them know what's going on. Then they're right there willing, wanting to know how to help and how to get involved, which is great.
Jane had a story she told a moment ago about some of the responses that she heard in testimony at the State House. But I wanted you all to tell our listeners what you would like for them to do and how can they do that.
Well, I would like everybody and their neighbor and cousin to contact your legislators, the senators and representatives, and maybe blast out to all of them. It's not that hard to do. If you anybody has any questions about how to do that, who their legislator is, or whatever, you can certainly call me at 816-523-7781, and I'll guide you towards resources that can help you, work with you to approach your legislators, and that kind of thing.
And give that telephone number one more time in case somebody didn't have a pencil ready.
816-523-7781.
And you have a website they can go to also.
Yes. It's www.mowpc.org. Click on ERA campaign. Especially watch the young women in the Got Rights video, and it's quite a remarkable video of how young women aren't realizing they don't have the same rights that women in France. It pans off to France, Japan, countries we're requiring in the Mideast that they have equal rights in their constitution, and we don't. Go figure.
Amazing. Go figure is right. Well, tell that story about a woman testifying about how she was treated when she found out the work she was doing. And
yes, there was one senator. Her senator, she went to call on, and he was backpedaling the whole time she was in there, just making the case for the Equal Rights Amendment. And he said, well, women can go elsewhere if they don't like their job and they don't like their pay. He didn't think about seniority and issues like that. But she told her own personal story, thinking surely this would affect him. She was a dietitian with some years years in service and a whole crew that worked with her in a senior living arrangement. And a maintenance man was hired, and she found out that he was making more money than she was. And the senator said, well, did you ask for a raise? You know, blame the victim.
Just amazing. Just amazing. Courtney, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, do you have any final words you'd like to say to our listeners?
Well, you know, I think that I want to thank you for having me on, and I want to thank everybody who's involved, and there are so many women throughout our state, and men as well, who are involved in working toward finding solutions to getting the ERA ratified. And I think we have a wonderful opportunity this year with the grants that have been provided to our state. I know that at the Greater Kansas City Women's Political Caucus, we are right there on board for helping however we can. I think that it's a very positive sign that our women's organizations are working together in one group effort on this issue, because I feel that this issue really needs to be addressed, so that that way we're not constantly having to battle all of these other issues. And if there's anyone who'd like to get involved, they can go and find us on Facebook at the Greater Kansas City Women's Political Caucus page, and you can visit our website too at gkcwpc.org, and we would love to have you join us as well.
Okay, thank you so much, Mary Mosley. I think we've let her go. Courtney Cole and Jane Krigler,
thank you so much
for being here today.
Funding for KKFI provided by the Weekly Forum at All Souls UU Church. Each Sunday at 10 a.m., the forum will feature a discussion on community issues. All Souls UU Church is at 4501 Walnut Street, one block east of Main in Kansas City. More information is at allsoulskc.org.
And we are back, and we are in the middle of our pledge drive right now, and we are ready to take your calls, and we have several options of giving that you can do, including sustained giving, and we'll give you a little bit more information on that.
Sustainer giving is an easy, efficient way for you to support the programs you trust and rely on through secure, automatic monthly payments from your credit card, debit card. Spreading your support over time is easier on your budget. Plus, it gives KKFI the security of a steady, reliable stream of program support. You'll feel good about knowing that you're continuing to support KKFI's vital service to our community. To sign up to be a sustaining member, call now at 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901. Or go online at kkfi.org. Call now, 888-931-0901.
And we're back with Amy Bell at the audio board, and with Sherry Roulette Mosley,
yes,
who is going to talk to us about being an actress in Kansas City, and also who her role models have been, and some of the people you portray. I've seen you at the Warnell House recently,
yes,
with Molly Postlewaite, who's quite a fine storyteller.
Yes.
And so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you both very much for having me on the show and inviting me on here. And I would like to say, before we start on the acting aspect of it, I was just listening to a lot of your last segment, and I will get to the acting, and it's very frustrating that we're still speaking about this subject in 2014. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's almost as frustrating as when I'm thinking about certain minority rights that we're still speaking about, that we're still speaking about having a Black History Month opposed to actually just inserting it all throughout the whole year. Those kind of things are very frustrating to me, and possibly that's why some of my role models in acting are those who are not only actresses on stage, but they're also activists for human rights, minority rights. I've been an actress for over 25 years. I hope I'm not aging myself here.
You look very young to me.
Well, I started in Kansas City. I came back to Kansas City after I got my theater arts degree from Grambling State University, which is a historically black college. And I got married first, had a child, and after getting settled with her, I ventured out and started auditioning and got to start with a role for Guys and Dolls. And eventually I met someone who that led to something different and something different, and this career actually started looking promising, and I started thinking, maybe I can do this after all. This degree that my mother was probably thinking, why in the world did she pick theater arts? This degree may actually work out for me. And I have, it's been a very wonderful, humbling experience. Been very grateful for the small things and also the things on a big scale that I've been able to do. Yesterday I talked to Molly, and I think I spoke with you also earlier about who my role models are and were. I'm very grateful that I was born into a family where my first role models, as far as females especially, was actually my circle of in my family. I come from a family of very strong women, very strong opinionated women, and it kind of grounded me on being confident in who I am. So before I'm even an actress, I know who I am as a person. And I have my mom, my grandmother, her mom, aunties, cousins, nieces, all of them. And the second thing I'm grateful about is that the men in our family allowed the women, without feeling threatened, to be who they are and not to just put us into a box as what our role is in society. And the men were men. So, you know, they were a man. They were actually the kind of man that's a man. They took care of family. They worked and the whole bit, but they were never threatened by the fact that we were very strong in who we are. Who inspired me? Who inspires me? People like Oprah Winfrey. I know that's a cliche, but I love her.
Uh-huh.
Hillary Clinton, I love her. Uh-huh. Michelle Obama, love her. Mother Teresa, love her. Princess Diane, people who have something that they stand for in life. You know, those are my role models who inspire me at different points in my life, sometimes all together, depending on what stage I am in life. And so that carries on with me on stage. I've done some wonderful work in Kansas City. And outside of Kansas City, I enjoy being and living here in Kansas City and working with several actresses and theaters here. And I've just been wonderful journey for me.
And how did you get involved with Molly?
Molly and I met at the Warnell House, and I had heard about Molly. Through, she's going to kill me. She's another storyteller. And but I had heard about Molly. I was at the Warnell House, and it was my first time working for them. They do this event every year for Christmas, and I was doing the story of Harriet Tubman. And when I met Molly, it's like we just connected. There are certain people, your spirits and your energy just like a magnet. And she was one of those. And we had a pretty good relationship after since then. We don't keep in contact as often, but she's the kind when you see it and you hear her, you see her name on a caller ID or you see her on the Facebook, you're excited that you know, oh, there's Molly. So, yes.
Yes. She is a spirit of some sort.
Yeah.
She just exudes light, in my opinion. She's a very special person. Yes,
she is.
And so in some of the women in history that you have portrayed, the Harriet Tubman performance is pretty remarkable. I'm pretty sure I've seen you do that one. In fact, I think you did that at the Warnell House just during the holiday season.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. And so we know from listening to people in Kansas City in the theater that it's a rough road to make a living in the theater.
Yes.
But Kansas City has a very vibrant theater community and lots and lots and lots going on. And are you involved with any particular theater group, or how do you go out and find roles? How do you do that?
Well, it's very interesting because left Kansas City for 15 years. My husband's job took us to New York, and I loved it. And then eventually we ended up in Chicago, and now we're back here. Before I left Kansas City, which was like 1991 possibly, 92 maybe, there was not much to offer, especially for minority actresses here in Kansas City. I was very grateful for theaters like The Coterie and others who actually did a lot of non-traditional casting, with colorblind casting. Mm-hmm. When I came back about 6 or 7 years ago, there's this whole new wonderful vibe mm-hmm. that just takes you and just embraces you. So many theaters now offering roles that tell not just one story, but a whole lot of different experiences of the black experience and just experience of just being an American or being a person. And it's vibrant, like you said, it's very exciting. I audition, and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm called and say, I have a script, would you like to read for a part? And I'll say, thank goodness, because I'm horrible at auditioning. It's not my favorite thing to do at all. I'm like, oh, God, I hate this. But so that's how I'm getting, so far I've been given my parts just by someone saying, I heard your voice when I was writing this, or could you come and read for this? And I'm saying, yes, I would like to do that.
Well, that's excellent.
Yeah, and I'm very always so grateful that thank you, God, because I was about to wonder where's my next paycheck coming from.
How do you like doing the historical acting? I have an absolute love for history myself, mm-hmm. and the idea of putting on this persona, do you interact with people as the character, or do you do a show?
Well, it's funny because it's such a different format than traditional stage when you're doing something like I did at the Warnow House. And I've done Sojourner Truth. The Coterie had a show there, and it was a wonderful experience, because she is basically probably the top role model as far as historical figures. She was an activist for women's rights and the whole bit. I think I told you I gravitate to that type of energy. But when I did the Warnow House, that was my first time doing that type of format, and I was like, okay, so do they want me to talk to the people or what? But when you do a historical figure, you know you can't be that person, so you just really try to do a lot of research and try to find the spirit of what you think that person is about, and you try to give an honest portrayal of what you feel the spirit of what they were trying to portray in life. And that's how I go about doing it.
So did it feel good to channel the spirit of Harriet Tubman and stand there and feel what it was like to lead people to freedom?
Yes, and the Harriet Tubman is probably my favorite story of all the experiences of all the women in history, because it was proof, and I think I said this, that the Harriet Tubman story is actual proof of how everyone can come together to make something happen when they know it's a wrong thing to be done in history. The Harriet Tubman story tells how whites, blacks, men, women all came together to make sure that she was able to get slaves from one point all the way up to as far as Canada. I mean, she couldn't have done that by herself. So it showed the good nature of every color who would hide them in their cellars and give them transportation and food and water and, you know, make sure they got medical attention when they needed it. Because, you know, you couldn't have done that by yourself without the help of everyone. So when I'm doing Harriet Tubman, yeah, it does feel really good at the end to know that you are trying your best to tell her story, and people are receiving it and understanding just how important and how significant she was in history.
That's excellent.
I actually saw a house where Harriet Tubman lived when I was in Schenectady in 98.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the women's rights 150th anniversary mm-hmm. of the beginning in Seneca Falls, and we traveled around and saw some historical sites. I saw the grave of I know Frederick Douglass was buried mm-hmm. there, and I can't remember who else was buried there with him. I want to say Elizabeth Cady Stanton in Rochester, New York, but I can't remember. It was pretty awesome to go back there and see the beginning of what took place. And Harriet Tubman, she had some terrible things to overcome with her health and the beatings
right.
that she took. And
that's so true.
It's such a tragic story, and how she was strong enough to do that is amazing.
It is amazing. I did not realize until I did research, and I can't think of the proper name. Maybe you can help me with this, that when she was younger, she had gotten between the slave master and another slave who was trying to run away. And as she went, you know, stood between them, the slave master was throwing an object, a heavy object, which hit her smack dead in the head. And she was in a coma for a while. In fact, they thought she had died. But that gave her a condition where she would just, out of the clear blue, just fall asleep. So, you know, she could easily be walking through the woods and saying, we're going to go this way, and she's out. So, but she was able to overcome that even. And
I've never heard that story before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had you shared it?
Yes. I knew, I knew that she had this affliction that came upon her because of this injury that she suffered. I think I heard that in when I was back in Rochester.
Yeah.
So when you're preparing for a role like this, and you know, when I'm reading a book
right.
about somebody or even just fiction, mm-hmm. you can get really emotionally into a book. And
yes.
when you are taking a person and putting yourself into this person who has this level of fear and, you know, stress mm-hmm. and all these things, do you find yourself ever getting caught up in this character
yes.
and their emotions and
yeah, in fact, it's funny.
Anxiety, and feeling the anxiety.
Everything you
yes.
really do is really feel. It's really just interesting how that really does happen. And there are times when I would be reading a script and I would find myself getting caught up with my husband's like, is everything okay? I'm reading a script. So yeah, you really do. You take on some of those anxieties, and sometimes you'll have our outer body experience, and you're actually watching that person as you're reading. I mean, even when I'm reading a book, like you say, I can actually hear how the person sounds, how they look, the whole bit.
Yeah, it's an emotional experience. And
it
then
is.
To literally put yourself into that mm-hmm. position where you're saying those things out loud, especially when it's such a really
intense
yes. and harrowing story that she's going through.
And I love it when you know your audience is connecting with it, you know, and because the whole thing is really not for your enjoyment to be on stage or what you are able to do, but really you want people to leave out with thoughts of how I can make things better or a position or challenging maybe what they thought were things should be or some type of, you should never leave out the theater the way you came in. You just should leave out somehow better. And when you see the audience and you feel them connecting with you, it just takes it to another whole level. And it's just wonderful. It's just magic, basically. And I love it.
I can almost sense that. I can't see myself being an actress at all. But it would be fun, wouldn't it? I mean, you can sense what she's talking about. That's so amazing. You should never leave a play without being different.
Yeah, you really should not. I mean, that's what, to me, that's the purpose of
uh-huh.
live theater
mm-hmm.
especially. You should never walk in and come out the same way. It should change. If
uh-huh.
it's not doing that, but there's guilty pleasure plays, you know. I'm guilty of liking and laughing at those too. But even through that, you can see, you should be able to find something in that makes you a little different when you leave
mm-hmm.
out. And that's always a wonderful thing when you know that your audience is making that connection and they leave out and at the end of the play they tell you something that's changed about them. It could be so small, something insignificant to you, but to them it's important. And that's all that's important. That's what matters.
And what's this next play you're going to be in? Tell
us
about that.
It's Vicky Bottry, and what I love about Vicky Bottry, she's a local playwright, is that she writes plays that you don't realize that what you're learning or getting because she has humor in it, and it just snatches you at the end or sometime throughout the play. It's called The Frowning the JJs of Shady Pine, and it takes place in a nursing home. It's a comedy drama. It's funny but poignant at the same time. And what I like is that it's mostly women. It's for women. We have one man, Jeff Smith, and I love the cast. Nancy Marcy, wonderful actress. We have Petra Allen, and then we have Christy Seifer. She's my first time being on stage with her, and myself. And I'm telling you, this play is going to just really hit you at the end. And I love it. I feel so honored to be with these women. I'm looking so forward to it. It's going to be at the JOB just off Broadway. We open the 20th of March up until April the 6th, mostly evening performances, matinees on Sunday. There's group rates, senior citizen rates, I think children rates, I hope I'm right. Harvey Williams from Melting Pot is directing it, and it's really going to be a wonderful production. I promise you, if you come there to see that, you're going to leave out saying, wow, I'm so glad I didn't miss this one.
Well, I'm going to do that. Well, when you're rehearsing, how long do you have to start rehearsing before you're ready to go on stage? And how on earth do you remember all those lines?
Well, it's a little more difficult to remember the lines than it used to be a long time ago. When I was younger, I could pick up a script probably like about maybe a week before rehearsal. I'm like, okay, I know my lines. But now it's like, okay, you need to give me that script about 2 months before rehearsal. But actually, rehearsals take, it depends on the theater. We did our first reading January the 11th. It could have been 12th. And we go into full rehearsal in the middle of February. We open up in March. And because a lot of time people, a lot of the actresses and actors have other jobs outside of the theater, you have to kind of center around, you know, what they're doing outside that. So you may not have rehearsals every evening, but most of the time, five days out of the week, you will have rehearsal. And you go in, and once you hear the voice of your character and the other voices of the other characters, the lines just start coming naturally to you. Before you know it, you're actually hearing the voice that you're about to speak before you even say it.
Because I'm glad to hear that, because I've always worried about. So you're saying when you put it together, mm-hmm. it's sort of like, then I can sort of sense what you mean, that
yeah.
the lines come to you because you know your character and what mm-hmm. this character is supposed to say
yeah.
next.
And even if the other character changed the way they said the line, your character would just automatically and naturally change how you respond, because you're so into your character and you're so connected with the other character when it works that way. And the women that I'm working with, and Jeff, I've worked with Jeff before and Petra before, and I love Nancy Marcy. I've seen her 1,000 times on stage. You just know that's the kind of magic it's going to be, and you just get so excited. I'm very excited about it. And we have some very, I'm going to mention this one thing. We have some wonderful female playwrights in Kansas City. A lot of them are doing a lot of great work. Michelle T. Johnson, she has a play coming up also that I'm going to be involved in, Octavia, The Echoes of Octavia, and The Same Difference. A wonderful cast. I'm excited about that. So we got some wonderful things going on in Kansas City.
Well, how can we follow you as an actress? How can we stay abreast of what you're performing in?
Well, I'm on Facebook, and I usually always make sure I post what I am involved with. I'm going to venture out into another area that's outside my box. I'm a little nervous about it. And so I'm a closet songwriter, and I have decided that I'm going to start trying to share some things that's very intimate to me. You know, you're kind of afraid of things that people are not used to because they got you labeled as this.
Uh-huh.
And I try to, and I've been kind of hiding this for a while. So I'm going to start trying to post some things on Facebook in that regards as well. But you can follow me on Facebook.
Music is so personal. It is very hard to take that leap, isn't it?
It is the scariest thing. I've been doing this, believe it or not, since college.
It's not even stage fright, but you just, it's so personal.
It is so personal, and very few people, I bet you, there's so very few people I can count on one hand, probably, who knows that I'm a closet songwriter.
And now, do you sing also?
That's the problem.
Oh, no!
That's the problem.
Well, it sounds to me like you should have a good voice. Oh, gosh, I can relate to that being the problem, but I'm not even a songwriter, but I certainly don't have the voice. Well, it's about time for us to wrap up. Thank you so much,
thank you.
Sherry. Roulette Mosley. So yes. On Facebook, yes. They'd push. Spell your name for our listeners.
S H E R R I Roulette R O U L E T T E dash Mosley M O S L E Y.
Great. So we can look you up on Facebook and stay connected with your career and wish you lots
Thank
of good
you.
Parts and good luck with your coming out of the closet with your songwriting,
Thank
too.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And how much time do we have?
We're going to take a little bit of pledge drive here for just a second, and then we'll move on to the Urban Connections, which is going to be pretty good coming up.
Did you know that you might be able to double, maybe even triple your gift with your company's matching gift program? Many companies participate in a program that matches their employees' gifts to nonprofit organizations, such as KKFI. Contact your human resources office and ask if your employer provides matching gifts for your gift.
And if you would like to donate to KKFI, go ahead and make your pledge right now. We have people standing by, and we wanted to announce that Jane Kriegler is getting a T-shirt. She made her $90 or more pledge to get her long-sleeved official KKFI collector's T-shirt.
Good. Thank you, Jane, and thanks to our guest today, Mary Mosley, Dixie Courtney, and did I say I'm sorry, where did I come
Courtney
up with that?
Courtney Cole.
Courtney Cole.
Courtney
I don't know
Cole.
Where I came up with that name. Jane Kriegler and Sherry Roulette Mosley for helping us put every woman on today. Thank you so much. We'll be back next week, and entering the studio now is Donna, and we're ready for Urban Connection. Well, shortly.